We have quite a treat today. We welcome back into our midst Elder and Sister Ken and Sue Allen, who've been serving in the Russia St. Petersburg mission since April of 2017. So it is a thrill for them to come back and to rejoin us, and we're very excited to hear from them. We will first hear from Sister Sue Allen, and then she will be followed by Elder Ken Allen. I'll turn the word to Allen.
It's so nice to be back in a ward where everybody speaks English. Our Russian never got very good, but we loved the people of St. Petersburg. The St. Petersburg mission had four standards of excellence. Pray for guidance, that is, receive personal, individual revelation and act on it. Be obedient. Christ said to us, if ye love me, keep my commandments. And we do show our love for him by being obedient. Love the people. That part was really easy. Find joy in the work. That was a lot harder. Russia's a really tough place to be. Not a missionary. Russia has some very interesting laws about religion and privacy. We were not missionaries. We were volunteers, and our visas gave us permission to support the church members in Russia. Our visas were only good for 3 months. Every 3 months, we had to leave the country for 20 minutes and come back. Sometimes we went to Helsinki to go to the temple, and we stayed longer than 20 minutes, but mostly we drove to Narva, Estonia, about a two-hour drive, and then we'd come back. The volunteers in Russia are not allowed to initiate conversations about religion. Oh, and we couldn't wear our name tags in public. That was a weird thing about being in Finland. The missionaries loved to go over there because then they were missionaries and they could wear their name tags and they could talk to anybody about anything. But in Russia, no conversations about religion. But they could answer questions if asked. There is no religious teaching allowed outside of a church building. In a private home, they could teach, but only if all those present were already members. So all of the missionary lessons, volunteer lessons, were always taught at the church. There are no ward lists. Can you imagine functioning without a ward list? Russian privacy laws do not allow the distribution of private information about individuals. The bishop has a spreadsheet, which is and it's only list those who have signed a document allowing the church to have their private information. So it's kind of a very summarized ward list. And those privacy agreements were only started about 6 months ago. So there's a lot of people whose church records are in a vault in Moscow, and they stay there until the church organization in Moscow gets the privacy agreement, and then it's allowed to be given to the bishop. But we are obedient to the law, and we work very hard to be obedient to the law. But President Rossin, who is our wonderful mission president, would say, we have to think outside the box. That is, we do things differently than missionaries in other places, but we have to stay inside the fence. That said, Russia has an amazing Christian heritage. They have no concept of an apostasy. Because St. Andrew the Apostle came to Russia after the death of Christ and opened it up for Christianity, and it's been the same Christian church ever since. Even during the height of the Stalinist era, they did a census in 1939 or so, and 56% of the people admitted to being religious, which was pretty high considering the social consequences of being during communism, admitting to being religious, and probably a lot of others were also, but didn't admit it. There is a Russian folk legend that Christ appeared in Russia and walked among the people after his resurrection. To those of us who know and love the Book of Mormon, doesn't sound unusual at all. But it's interesting how strong this tradition is. Fyodor Dostoevsky, you've probably heard of, one of the most famous Russian authors, wrote a book called The Brothers Karamazov, and there's a chapter in there called The Grand Inquisitor about a priest. And in there, Dostoevsky quotes another famous Russian poet. "Among us," Tuchev said, "with absolute faith in the truth of his words, bearing the cross in slavish dress, weary and worn, the heavenly king, our mother Russia came to bless, and through our land went wandering." And this was written in the 1870s, quoted by Dostoevsky in the 1880s. And also in the Russian Museum is this amazing museum, which is all Russian art. There is a life-size, 8-foot-tall painting of this scene of Christ visiting with peasants in a village in the mountains of Russia. It was painted in 1903 by a man named Nesterov, and he said he painted it based on this folk legend that Christ had visited Russia. So we have the constraints of Russian law contrasted with this strength of spirituality that really does run deep in the Russian people. Some of you probably heard Sister Nelson's story about going to Russia and asking people which tribe they were from and their patriarchal blessings. And in a meeting in Moscow of women, she had 11 of the 12 tribes and then went to, I think it was Kiev, but to another city on the next day and met a young man who was of the 12th tribe. So all 12 tribes we know are scattered, and the people of Russia will tell you that they're every which tribe. Most of us here are Ephraim, but the people of Russia are all over the place. One nice thing about coming to a new ward is that I can share a story that I heard in Sacrament Meeting a couple of weeks ago. Because I'd like to talk about service and how we serve and how the people of Russia serve. So I'm sitting in the car in the parking lot and my phone rings. Of course, I'm not driving, so I can reach in and answer it. And being the fumble fingers that I am, I drop my phone down between the seat and the center console. Anybody ever done that or something down there? You can't get it out. Your fingers are too fat. The phone's ringing. What am I going to do? I need something long and skinny. So I have a pen in my purse. That's easy. Now, what's the purpose of a pen? The pen's purpose in life is to write things. It can write books. It can write to-do lists. It can write notes. It can write anything. That's its purpose in life. I want to use this pen to stick down between the seat and the center console to get my phone out. Now, what if the pen said, "I won't do that. That's not my purpose. I'm not a stick down between the seat thing. I'm a writing thing. You can't ask me to do that." That all sounds a little silly, doesn't it? But often, we are asked to do the things that we don't really think are ours to do. We're asked to serve in ways that could be very different from our comfort zone or what we think our purpose is or our direction. We felt that way a little being called to Russia. We had already served a mission in Germany. We both speak German. Why in the world did we get sent to Russia? But we did, and it was wonderful. And I want to share with you a little bit of those who have served there with us. Natalia. Half the women in Russia are named Natalia. But this Natalia, she and her husband were, I think, the first or one of the first Russian couples to be sealed in the temple. And she's amazing. Unfortunately, now her husband and her two teenage sons are not active. But she's there at church every Sunday. She teaches Sunday school most weeks. She teaches Relief Society sometimes. She plays the piano for Sacrament Meeting and just does anything anybody ever asks her to do, no matter what. And to me, she's just this example of happiness and sunshine and unselfish service wherever she's needed. One of our favorite people there was Sister Efimova. Sister Efimova is, she'd never tell us how old she was, I would guess mid-70s, and she's just the typical Russian babushka. A babushka is a grandmother, and the grandmothers are really the ones who run Russia, if you didn't know that. I mean, the missionaries would have babushkas come up to them on the street and say, "That coat you're wearing isn't warm enough," or "Where is your umbrella?" I mean, they just really tell people what to do and how to do it. And Sister Efimova was that way. She and her husband were the first Russian couple called to be mission presidents from Russia to Russia. And they opened the mission in Yekaterinburg in 1996. Those of you who remember McKay Bonham, he served in Yekaterinburg. It's up in the Ural Mountains. It's the northernmost, coldest mission in the church. We would complain when the temperature got below zero in St. Petersburg, but it was running minus 40 in Yekaterinburg. But they opened that mission and are just dearly beloved, you can imagine, by the members there and all the missionaries who ever served with them. Now she has an entirely different job. She is in charge of all the apartments for the St. Petersburg mission. And she just takes care of them. It's a huge burden off the mission president because she talks to all the landlords and she figures when people have to move in and move out and she negotiates the contracts, and if something gets broken, she just tells the landlords that they have to fix it and they have to pay for it, and that's just the way it is. And she's just this warm-hearted, wonderful lady, and everybody loves Sister Efimova with all our hearts. Brother Zaretsky is the stake patriarch. We all know what the calling of a patriarch is, to give patriarchal blessings. We had a wonderful patriarch in our ward when Walter Gaughan was the patriarch for our stake, and we loved him dearly. But in Russia, the patriarch has another job. That is, he is the president of the corporation of the church for St. Petersburg. It's called the local religious organization, and because, as in many other countries, the church itself out of Salt Lake Corporation is not allowed to own property or rent apartments or do any of those legally kinds of things, there is a church corporation, and it's called the local religious organization of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Russia. That's the whole big long name. And Brother Zaretsky is the president legally of that corporation. That means he's really the one who signs all the leases and then sublets to the missionaries, etc. That's very different work than you would consider the calling of a patriarch. But that's his job as a pen to do what needs to be done. President Leo Strin is the stake president of St. Petersburg Stake. And he is a wonderful man. You can ask the Nielsens about him. Don and Helen met him because he is a professional tour guide by day and the spiritual guide for the 8 wards and branches in that stake. He's in his mid-40s, has 4 little kids, just wonderful man. But when Russia has compulsory military service, so everybody goes in the army for a year or two after they finish high school. It's a year now, it used to be 2, when he did it, it was 2. And so the first year he had this great cushy job as secretary to some really high mucky muck general. Loved it. Then somebody came in one day and said, "We can't have somebody who's a member of your church serving in this sensitive position. You have been changed and your assignment now is to work in the kitchen." So he had a choice. He could say, "Nuts to the church, I'll keep my cushy job in the army." But he didn't. He went and spent his last year of service in the kitchen and was glad to do it. So these people are people who are serving as they are called, not necessarily in the way of their initial idea of strength. Each of us has this opportunity too. We are called, we are living in a place that's pretty easy, and sometimes we're called to do something that's difficult, that's out of our comfort zone. But we know that King Mosiah spoke about this to his people when he said, "When you're in the service of your fellow beings, you are only in the service of your God." And that's what really this life is about. It's about finding times to be of service and looking of ways that we can support and help those around us, no matter how we do it or how we're asked to do it, but in ways that they need, not necessarily in ways that are easy for us. Our mission president had a famous anonymous story. We had a mission song, and it had all of these little catchphrases in it, and one of them was, "We'll push the rock." A story's been told of a time when the Lord told a man he had work for him to do and showed him a large rock in front of the man's cabin. The Lord explained that the man was to push against the rock with all his might. This the man did, day after day after day. For many months, he toiled from sunup to sundown, his shoulders set squarely against the cold, massive surface of the unmoving rock, pushing with all his might. Each night, the man returned to his cabin, sore and worn out. Seeing that the man was showing signs of discouragement, Satan decided to enter the picture by placing thoughts into the man's mind, such as, "You have been pushing against the rock for a long time, and it hasn't budged. You're never going to be able to move it." These thoughts began to discourage and dishearten the man even more. In the midst of battling discouragement, the man decided to make it a matter of prayer and take his troubled thoughts to the Lord. "Lord," he said, "I've been labored long and hard in your service, putting all my strength to do that which you have asked. Yet after all this time, I have not even budged that rock by half a centimeter. I'm failing you." To this, the Lord responded compassionately, "My friend, when I asked you to serve me and you accepted, I told you that your task was to push against the rock with all your strength, which you have done. Never once did I mention to you that I expected you to move it. Your task was to push. And now you come to me with your strength spent, thinking that you have failed. But is that really so? Look at yourself. Your arms are strong and muscled, your back sinewy and sturdy, your hands are calloused from constant pressure, and your legs have become massive and hard. Through opposition, you have grown much, and your abilities now surpass that which you used to have. Yet you haven't moved the rock. But son, I did not ask you to move the rock. I simply ask you to push. It is my job to move the rock." The volunteers and members in St. Petersburg and across Russia are pushing hard against the rock. They're not moving it, but they know that the Lord will do it in his own good time. I remember when the first missionaries were allowed in Italy in 1966. And today a temple is being dedicated there, and the prophet is speaking with the people. The Lord has moved the rock. When we first spoke in St. Petersburg Ward 2 years ago, when we arrived, I told the people about my grandparents, who moved to Southern California in 1917, which had been 100 years before, when there was not even a stake. There were a few small branches in Southern California. They waited 8 years for a stake. They waited 40 years for a temple. Now there are 150 plus stakes and 7 temples in California. The Lord moved the rock. In 1903, Francis Lyman dedicated the land of Russia for the return of the gospel. There's a wonderful, huge painting done by a church member on the wall of the foyer of the St. Petersburg Stake Center. And it shows the men standing in the summer garden in St. Petersburg, dedicating St. Petersburg for the land, or dedicating Russia for the return of the gospel. The summer garden is such a beloved place in the city of St. Petersburg. When it was under siege for 3 years during World War II, the trees in the summer garden were the only ones that were not cut down for fuel. Almost 1 million people died, mostly from starvation, but the trees in the summer garden stayed. It's a very special place. Of course, with the revolution in 1917, all religions, even Russian Orthodox, were banned, and the church was taken out of Russia. But in 1990, now President Russell M. Nelson went back and stood in the summer garden and rededicated the land of Russia for the return of the gospel. In 2012, President Nelson, who dearly loves Russia, came back and created the St. Petersburg Stake and went back to the Summer Garden because he said this is such a special place. The Lord is moving the rock. Russia has been promised a temple. President Nelson again last year announced in General Conference that there would be a temple in Russia. That was such a total surprise. You know, the talks are written ahead of time and given to the translators. That was not in his prepared remarks. The other temples were, but that one he just tacked on at the end. And everybody in Russia is pretty excited. They can go to Helsinki or they can go to Kiev. Well, now they can't go to Kiev. It's really hard to get into Ukraine if you're Russia now. But they go to Helsinki. But it's expensive visas and a lot of travel and difficult. And they're really looking forward. even before President Nelson announced it, there's an empty lot of about 20 acres just a few blocks up the street from the current stake center, and we had started calling it the Temple Lot. Probably won't be. It would be politically a very difficult place to build a temple, but it would be a beautiful spot. It's right on the river and close to mass transit and all those good things. Maybe someday. We'll see. But the Lord will move the rock. It will happen. У меня есть свидетельство, что Бог живет, и Он любит нас. Я благодарен за возможность служить в России. Я знаю, что Иисус Христа наш Спаситель. Я знаю, Джозеф Смит восстановил истину Евангелия. Я знаю, что Рассел М. Нельсон пророк сегодня. Я знаю, что книга Мормона – Слово Бога. In English. I have a testimony that God lives and loves us. I'm thankful for the opportunity I had to serve in Russia. I know that Jesus Christ is our Savior. I know that that Joseph Smith restored the true gospel. I know that Russell M. Nelson is our prophet today. And I know the Book of Mormon is the Word of God. Я благодарю все. Я говорю это во имя Иисуса Христа. Аминь.